Bill. What? Bill says he only has 500 slides tonight, so.
I can go with that on the keyboard.
But he can talk real fast.
Daddy can take it out.
Whoops. Got a little technical hang up here, folks. Just a moment. Okay, Bill Koenig, he's been here about 12, 14 times or something like that.
Yes.
White House correspondent, and he's keeping an eye on those Democrats in Washington there right now. So go ahead.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Tommy. Great to be back with you all again. And as I was putting my PowerPoint together, I've got it down to 500 slides, so I think I can get through it all.
Yeah.
That's about how much has happened this year. I don't think I've ever seen a year quite like the last 12 months. It is amazing. And even the last 90 days, we are moving into unprecedented times and uncharted waters. And only God knows how it's going to play out. Well, he's given us the scriptures. We have a good handle on the scriptures. But as far as the interplay and how things are playing off each other, I think a lot of us are just in awe of what's taking place right now. To start with, our website address is watch.org. We post news 365 days a year. That's world news that's biblically relevant. And that's the great thing about the Internet. We have the opportunity to watch the British news services, which are some of the best in the world, the Russian, the Middle Eastern news sources, the Israeli sources, and also the United States sources, which I don't use that often, which is probably not a surprise. But the key is world news that's biblically relevant. And every Friday I put out a news report from the White House. It's a summary of the key news that happened that week that's biblically relevant. It's usually 15 to 20 pages, and that's very difficult to keep it at that length, but we have been doing this for 11 years, every week for 11 years, and the main thing is just to help connect the dots. We all see different parts of the news. You know, we're doing it day in, day out, so we have a pretty good handle on what to watch. And where to go quick when something breaks. And then at the end of the week in our news report, we attempt to connect those dots so you have a pretty good handle on what's going on. People use it for their Bible studies. They use the information to pray, knowing what to pray and what leaders to pray for. And also, it's always awesome to see Bible prophecy as written by these Jewish prophets and Jesus play out right before our eyes. I mean, we are living in the time as spoken of by Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Zechariah, Jesus in the Olivet Discourse, and then the book of Revelation. This is our blessing to be watching these things firsthand. All major areas in prophecy are in play. In the past, we might have three or four in play at a time, but for the last three or four years, all 12 or so final day markers are in play. Russia, Iran, Turkey, Syria, one world financial order, one world religious order, on and on and on. What's interesting is the United States, even though it's not real obvious that we're in the final day scriptures, and there's still some debate, but for the most part, it doesn't look like we're involved, but we are a major facilitator of the acceleration of final day events coming together to the completion prior to the Lord's thousand-year millennial, his return and then his thousand-year millennial reign. The report is $1 a week on a 12-month subscription and $1.15 a week on a 6-month subscription. I thought I'd throw this up. There's a little red arrow there. That's me. This was at the White House press conference 2 weeks ago, and I thought it'd be interesting to add this. Is James Rosen is about three over to my left. You can't see his full face, but you can see part of it. He's a great guy. I've had a chance to talk to James about biblical events. He's the Fox State Department guy and just a really neat guy. And then on my right is an Orthodox Jew. He's been in and out of the White House for 22 years. So right before this question, there was like two questions from the U.S. side, two from the French side, is I was giving Robert the scriptures that he needs to be studying because he studies the Torah and the Talmud. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, now Robert, Ezekiel 38, 39, Isaiah 17, 1, Jeremiah 49, 35 through 39. You can look at the nations in the Psalm 83 scripture. And in the time clock is Jerusalem. Look at Zechariah 12 through 14. He's just taking notes like this. And it's so fascinating because there's a couple Orthodox Jews that are at the White House. When something major happens in the Middle East, they rush to me and ask me, where is that in the Tanakh, the Old Testament? It's classic. I just love it. And both of them are just very into Torah and they're very into the Talmud. But right there in the middle of this press conference, I was having a chance of pointing Robert once again to key scriptures. There's also five Middle Eastern correspondents from Middle Eastern countries, wonderful people. I have had the chance to talk to each one of them about Armageddon. The Lord put in my heart, talked about Armageddon. I've shared this before here, but it's just such a neat thing because I keep them up to date on what's taking place. The Lord put on my heart Armageddon because almost everybody has heard of Armageddon. Or the apocalypse. And they go, well, that's the apocalypse, right? I said, yes, yes. It's the final battle for Jerusalem. And then I'll talk about their countries and their roles. One lady from Iran, which she's almost ready to go to church with my wife and I. Very close. And also another fella from lady from Iraq. She's with Al Arabiya. Two of her family members were generals that were chased out of the country by Saddam Hussein. And I'm talking to her about the scriptures. And another lady, she's from Gaza. She grew up in Gaza. And just the fact that they have heard of Armageddon and they've heard of the final day war, and then giving them the nations to watch. And I mean, it's so obvious. They're all in play right now. Russia, Turkey, Iran, Libya, Sudan, Northern Africa. So it's just a great time to be sharing the gospel. So that's I do a lot of that up there. That's part of the reason I'm there. These are all, one other fellow, he's a Maronite Catholic from Lebanon, wonderful guy. He's with Middle East TV, but Pierre is just not into Bible prophecy. He's never studied it, but we've developed a great friendship, and I keep kind of teasing him and reminding him, you know, keep watching your country, Lebanon, the one that Hezbollah now controls. He's the one that told me four plus years ago, he said Assad will not be taken down. I said, Pierre, you've got to be kidding me. He said, no. He with the Alawites, which is quasi-Shiite, with Iran, he said he is positioned, he will not come down like Mubarak. And he was absolutely correct. But nonetheless, I continue to pray that one day he will have a greater interest. You can't help but see these things happening. And the guy right to my left, you can't quite see him. He's next to the guy in a beard. He's a Catholic. And he, same thing, not into Bible prophecy, but I'm making headway. So when I'm at the White House, I go up there to report the news, but I'm also up there to talk to them about Bible prophecy and also talk to them about Jesus as their Lord and Savior. So it's been a remarkable 15 years of opportunities to do this. As I was working on the PowerPoint today, I didn't know whether to put this in the disposition of the PowerPoint or at the end. And I kind of went back and forth, but I decided to put it first because I think we are living at a time when facts don't matter. And what convinced me that, my wife and I, Claudia and I, just returned from Israel a couple weeks ago. And a good friend of mine in the Israeli government press office said to me, we had a long conversation, he said, you know, it's perplexing because what is happening now, facts don't matter. I said, what do you mean, Ron? He said, well, in the past, during the Second Intifada, when there was a terrorism event and a British or any other newspaper got the facts wrong, they would correct the facts. And they would write about it in the paper, that they would say that we were wrong and we were specifically wrong and give the details. And he said, now we're not seeing that. So he said, we're at a point now where facts don't matter, where people take their sides and it doesn't matter. And then 48 hours later, we were back in Washington, D.C. I happened to turn on Fox, and Charles Krauthammer was talking about Hillary Clinton's Benghazi testimony, and he said, we're living in a time when facts don't matter.
I saw that program.
Thank you, Tommy. Cousin. So it is. I mean, we are living in a time when facts don't matter. And here is the challenge that we have today. The facts don't matter. And whether it's about terrorism, whether it's about any other kind of events, facts don't matter. People take their sides, that's it. I'm going to go through the events, the pivotal year between December 1st, 2014 to December 1st, 2015. I'm going to go through this outline quick and then give you the specifics. I wanted to put the outline in the front just in case I can't get to everything tonight because I have a lot of information and this is the first time I've given this PowerPoint. So I'm going to go through these events and then give you some more specifics. France approved a Palestinian state December 2nd. Their legislature, or their so like House, and their Senate on December 10th approved a Palestinian state. Then the French were determined and were really pushing hard on the EU Parliament to vote for a Palestinian state, which they did on December 17th. The same day, the euro collapsed from 1.25 euros to $1 down to 1.10 to $1. So the euro collapsed on the same day the EU Parliament voted for a Palestinian state. The French sponsored the UN Security Council vote on Palestine was defeated on December 30. Major terror event 8 days later in Paris. French blasts Obama administration for Middle East peace effort, April 4. U.S. Supreme Court, same-sex marriage approval, June 26. The rainbow image was placed on the White House, Obama proud, June 26. Iran nuke deal announced by Obama, July 14. U.S. markets lost $2 trillion in August and early September. Global markets lost $11 trillion in August and early September. Russian invasion of Syria on August 29. EU labeling of Israeli settlement products. This was in the process September through a November 11. Everything was official November 11. The migrant crisis explodes. At the time, the labeling thing becomes a major issue. This is when the migrant problem became enormous. And there's a definite apparent connection between the labeling and the migrant crisis. Pope Francis visits the White House, Congress in the U.S., September 23 to 25. Chinese president visits the White House, September 24, and has a press conference with Obama on the 25th. On the 25th, a Chinese ship, a carrier, docks in Tartus, Syria, next to a couple Russian ships. France led call for international troops on Temple Mount security cameras and peace talks in October. Russian Orthodox Church sees Putin as crusade leader in Syria and Middle East to defeat Islam. U.S. Christian leader met with Putin in Moscow. I know who he is. I know about the meeting. I can't release it yet, but it's going to be released in a couple of weeks. The Russian Orthodox Church set up the meeting for this national Christian leader to meet with Putin. It was a 45-minute meeting, and Putin has talked about having an event in Russia next year. And Putin has reached out to the Jewish community in Russia. He's very popular, so I won't go into a lot of details about that tonight, but that's a very interesting scenario. Jordanians begin installing cameras on the Temple Mount, November 12th. Second major terrorism event, November 13. France under high state of alert, November 13 through November 20. Russia tests satellite catcher, November 20. A capability of being able to knock a satellite out of the sky. Brussels high state of alert for 72 hours, November 21st. EU parliaments in Brussels closed for 72 hours. November 21, U.S.-China tension worsening. Putin meets Khamenei in Tehran, releases the S-300 missile aircraft system. Russia releases nuclear equipment to Iran. In the same day, Turkey shoots down a Russian jet the next day. Putin and Erdogan conflict begins to intensify on the 24th. Obama and the French President Hollande meet at the White House. White House gives up on Israel. Kerry frustrated. He was in Ramallah and met with Abbas and then Netanyahu. He leaves frustrated. Obama compares the pilgrims of the Mayflower and the plight of the refugees in his Thanksgiving address to the nation. U.S. terror event in San Bernardino, Obama's national terrorism speech, and Trump calls for Muslims to be banned from the U.S. for now. And I'll go into more, I'm sure it'll come up in the Q&A, but I'll go into more details about the political campaign at that time. So I'm going to go roll through the slides now. This is the French vote for the Palestinian state. This is a Palestinian official at the meetings. The French legislature on Tuesday, December 2nd, approved a resolution asking the government to recognize a Palestinian state. The vote was approved 339-151. A couple weeks later, the EU Parliament, or about 7 days later after the Senate approved, the EU Parliament approves a Palestinian state. The European Parliament, in principle, the recognition of a Palestinian statehood and the two-state solution, and believes that they should go hand in hand with the development of peace talks, which should be advanced. It says a resolution passed on Wednesday. It also decided to launch a Parliamentary for Peace initiative to bring together MEPs and MPs from Israeli and Palestinian parliaments. The vote was overwhelming, 498 votes to 88 with 111 abstentions. The EU Parliament is tired of funding the Palestinians. They're tired of providing funds after Hamas war with Israel. Hamas provokes them. There's been three provocations. And the EU says, you know, we're tired of funding this. We need a peace deal. So, you know, rather than dealing with the problem that Hamas is, they start focusing on the fact we're spending too much money and we're going to start pressuring Israel and the Palestinians to make peace. And there is a direct connection to this new motive, to this migrant. You know, it's the eye-to-eye consequence. Pressure on Israel, major consequence that corresponds. And that's exactly what I see the migrant. This migrant problem is enormous. And I'll go into more details here shortly. The euro collapse against the U.S. dollar and other currencies, as I mentioned, December 17. The French-initiated U.N. Security Council action on the Palestinian state was blocked on December 30. France sponsored and voted in the UN Security Council for a resolution calling for a Palestinian state. The UN Security Council has five permanent members. That's France, Russia, China, the United Kingdom, and the United States. And then there's 10 other members that are on a rotating basis. But the five permanent members of the UN Security Council must approve a resolution in order for it to be in effect. And fortunately, the UK abstained and the United States voted no. But this draft resolution that would have been affirmed the urgent need to reach a deal within 12 months. It would pave the way for a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. A one-year deadline for negotiations with Israel with a full and phased withdrawal of Israeli forces from the West Bank by the end of 2017. Look forward to welcoming Palestine for a full UN member state within the 12-month time frame. 8 of the Council's 15 members voted in favor, one fewer than the 9 members needed to pass a resolution in the absence of a veto by any of the Council's 5 permanent members. This is the French's doing. The French have been determined to take over a more responsible role in the peace process and even put pressure on Israel, on the United States to be more forthright in trying to force a deal between Israel and the Palestinians. Paris, France, 8 days later, a major terror strike. Not anywhere else in Europe, but in Paris. Reminds me a lot of what happened prior to 9/11. President Bush was working with Crown Prince Abdullah for 17 days on what was going to be the most comprehensive address ever given by an American president to the UN. They were going to call for Judea and Samaria to be given up, East Jerusalem to be given up, and a future Palestinian state in Judea, Samaria, and East Jerusalem. The work was completed in 9/10. The God of Israel did not produce the evil of 9/11, but he didn't stop it. And you see the same parallels with the two events, the two terror events in Paris. No one in the world, no nation in the world, no leadership in the world was pushing Israel and the Palestinians more than the French. And you can see by that UN resolution, and sadly, we had a major terror attack in France. The nation was under terror. World leaders came in. Europe was under terror and confused and worried. From January 7 to January 9, a total of 17 people were killed in attacks on the Charles Hebdo magazine, a kosher grocery store in the Paris suburb of Montrouge. Netanyahu warned Congress on the danger of Iran in his powerful message. I was there at the White House I was there on Capitol Hill and in the House chambers for that message. It was a powerful message. And he warned Congress on the danger of the Iranian nuke deal. And I was up at the very top. I could see every member of Congress. And I really appreciate the Lord putting me in that position because it was extremely revealing. The Democrats, who in the past have been very supportive of Israel, were very withdrawn with their applause. The Republicans were very strong with their applause, and the black congressional caucus was like this the whole time because they were furious at Netanyahu because they believed the fact that he would come to Congress, even when the White House did not want him to, was a disrespect to our president. So for the entire speech, the black congressional caucus was like this. They stood twice. There was a lot of standing ovations, mostly led by the Republicans. They stood twice when Elie Wiesel, the Holocaust survivor, was announced, and they stood and congratulated him. At the end of the speech, Netanyahu said, "God bless America," and they stood. That was the only 2 times in that entire speech. But this whole Iran deal became extremely political. The future of the world became extremely political. And Netanyahu could not have been more effective about the warning and danger of a nuclear Iran. Netanyahu said Iran's regime is radical as ever and noted the greatest dangers facing our world is the marriage of militant Islam with nuclear weapons. He said we can't let that happen in his joint congressional meeting. April 3rd, French Foreign Minister. French Foreign Minister Fabius has politely and indirectly reprimanded the U.S. for its reluctance to be involved in the Middle East solution. In the absence of a clear American policy on the Middle East, France, by both public and private diplomacy, is asserting itself as a major player and leading the international drive in an effort to end the Arab-Israeli conflict by a U.N. Security Council resolution in the near future. Some thought that would come about in September during the build-up to the U.N. and then the U.N. General Assembly, which began on September 15th through the end of the month. I think it was over October 1st. But that was a big... A lot of people thought that the French would push the resolution at the U.N. They did not at that time, but they did not slow down their effort. I'll go into that here shortly. But that's what the French said. In other words, the United States, you need to get more involved in this because we're taking charge. That's what the French attitude was. We're taking over. Move aside. Obama announced the Iran deal July 14th. He said, after 2 years of negotiations, the United States, together with our international partners, has achieved what decades of animosity has not, a comprehensive long-term deal that will verifiably prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. It's false. We negotiated from a position of strength and principle, and the result is a nuclear deal that cuts off every pathway to a nuclear weapon. There is a lady named Claire Lopez. She is works with Frank Gaffney Jr. She was with CIA for 28 years and probably understands the Middle East and Middle East terror groups better than anybody in Washington, D.C. I had a visit with her a couple years ago at the U.N., on the sidelines of the U.N. They were doing an EMP America event with former CIA Director James Woolsey and others. They had a panel. And I went up and we discussed Iran. And she said, it's not by chance that the Chinese, the Persians, the Iranians, and the Jews have survived the centuries because they're that bright. Iranian people are extremely bright. 85% of Iran favors the West or favors Israel. The Iranians used to have a great relationship with the Jewish people. It's the leadership of Khomeini and the radical Shiite leaders of that country. They control the security, they control the military, and they are the problem. But they are chess players. The P5 plus one, which included the United States, are checker players. And the P5, which is France, the United Kingdom, the United States, Russia, and China, wanted business opportunities with Iran. The plus one is Germany as well. The Europeans were pressured by European businesses to cut a deal with Iran. And they have a habit of not being able to recognize danger even when it's standing next to them. And that's exactly what happened. So here in fact, a deal was cut. The top terror sponsor, putting this in perspective, the top terror sponsor in the world will receive $150 billion in frozen funds. The deal has empowered Iran and increased the threats to Israel on her northern border and internally to the EU and the United States. And Hezbollah, Hamas, and other affiliated worldwide terror organizations will receive billions of dollars in aid. And Iran was so appreciative, the first couple days after the agreement was signed, Khomeini and some of the leadership of Iran called America the Great Satan once again, and Israel the Little Satan. And they have been blasting us day in, day out, ever since, whether it's the political figures or whether it's the military figures. Hard to believe, isn't it? But then again, this is Iran, and this is part of the technique. And when the Republicans stood up and said this deal is a bad deal and voted against it, the Democrats went with the party line for the most part. They say, well, this deal's better than war. We don't want to have war with Iran. But it was so short-sighted, and we haven't heard a lot from them lately, but you can feel that Iran has been empowered by this deal. And as one of the Republican senators said, Iran has never fulfilled any agreement that they've ever agreed to. And that will happen once again. After the deal, Quds Force Commander Soleimani reportedly visited Russia in Amman, a push by Moscow and Tehran to aid Assad in Syria. This man calls the shots in Iraq. I mentioned a lady whose family had generals in the Iraqi military that left when Saddam took over. She told me recently she met with the leader of the Iraqi military and says, the Iraqi military leader says, we don't call the shots. Iran calls the shots. So we have spent, lost many lives and over $1 trillion in Iraq and Afghanistan, and this guy is calling the shots in Iraq. The UN Security Council upheld a travel ban and asset freeze on Soleimani since 2007 when the international voted to sanction the IRGC. Soleimani reportedly traveled to Russia in late July, where he discussed the status of Iran's incoming Russian-made S-300 surface-to-air missile shipments. He and Putin also held discussions on how Tehran and Moscow would improve bilateral relations. June 26, 2015, the Vatican signs the first treaty with the state of Palestine. This agreement had been in the making for a while. Bishops from the Middle East had said that Israel has no right to make any claim, biblical claim, to the land of Israel today. And unfortunately, a lot of the bishops, the Catholic bishops in the Middle East, have a Palestinian background and have had a lot of influence over the Pope when he visited Israel and Bethlehem and Jordan. And this agreement signed the first treaty with the state of Palestine, calling for courageous decisions to end the conflict and backing a two-state solution. The treaty, which made official the Vatican de facto recognition of Palestine since 2012, angered Israel, which called it a hasty step that damages the prospect for advancing a peace agreement. Israel said it would have implications on its future diplomatic relations with the Vatican. And I like to emphasize this. This is the backing of a Palestinian state or another Arab state in Judea, Samaria, and East Jerusalem. The God of Israel did not intend for the biblical heart of Israel to be an Arab state. And there will continue to be consequences. The accord, which concerns the Catholic Church activities in area controlled by the Palestinian Authority, also confirmed the Vatican's increasingly proactive role in foreign policy under Pope Francis, including the global warming initiative I'll get to shortly. The Archbishop said at the signing that he hoped it would be a stimulus to bringing a definitive end to the long-standing Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which continues to cause suffering for both parties. The EU refugee crisis and EU labeling plan for Israel settlements. I watch these events, I watch patterns, and over again, whether it's the French pressure on Israel and the corresponding terror-related events or the catastrophes that we've experienced in America. We've had $90 billion events now since October of 1991, when the perfect storm was sending 30-foot waves into President Bush's home as he was in Israel, as he was in Madrid, Spain, calling for Israel to give Judea Samaria. Once again, there's a pattern here. This whole crisis is blown out of proportion. It's become a very divisive, problematic problem for the EU and also here in the United States, but especially in the EU. The EU wanted to punish Israel by requiring labeling for products that were made in Israeli settlements. And they were going back and forth on how the label should look and where it should be put in the package. So when a person goes to a store in Europe, and if the product's made in the Europe settlements, there will be like a warning on the package that this is made in settlements. But this will hurt the Palestinians too. They have a lot of jobs. They have great, well-paying jobs in the Israeli settlement communities of Samaria and Judea, and it provides a lot of jobs, good-paying jobs. The Barkhan Industrial Park, I've been into some of the facilities there. It's, you know, it's Israelis, Jews, and Arabs working side by side and quite successfully, and they make fantastic money. They make more money in those settlement communities than many other parts of Israel. The slogan, refugees, goes viral. 250,000 people in 48 hours back an independent petition calling for Britain to take its fair share of refugees. I'm going to go into the highlighted areas, the bolded areas. Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban says the crisis is a German problem. Hungary has a problem. Austria has a problem. And Merkel, a very effective political figure, been in office for 10 years, an effective chancellor for the most part, has got a crisis. She says we should bring in up to 800,000 immigrants into Germany. Why does the EU look at the migrants and the immigrants? Well, unfortunately, a lot of the countries in Europe aren't having enough children, and their economies is growing, especially the German economy, and they need someone to do the jobs and take the jobs. So that's why Germany was so open to these migrants. Well, what they've done is created nothing but a major problem for themselves. Cameron says Britain will take in an extra 20,000 refugees over 5 years. France agrees to take 24,000. Germany earmarked 6 billion euros to help an expected 800,000 extra refugees. September 9, Mr. Juncker urges the EU members to take an additional 120,000 refugees, bringing the total to 160,000. The UK, which opted out, is not included in these plans. The draft plans redistribute almost three-fifths of the new refugees to Germany, France, and Spain. Today, France is probably a little over 60 million people. There's 6 million Muslims in France and 600,000 Jews. And I can tell you right now, they already have a problem. The UK has a problem. Spain has a problem. And Germany is going to have a much bigger problem. And this is tragically, a lot of these people have been promised things in their countries that none of these countries will ever be able to fulfill. And there's been people that made a lot of money bringing these migrants into these countries. So what is happening when they can't get all this and can't get the money they think they're supposed to get from these countries, they're starting to riot. And it's making it extremely difficult for Europeans living in these countries. The European Union will now require the special labeling for Israeli products made in the West Bank, November 11. So it's done. The labeling has been agreed to, completed. Here is a list of what France was doing in October leading up to the November 13 terror event. France's proposed solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict sidelines France's proposed solution to the Israel-Palestinian conflict sidelined the U.S., invited 19 other countries in the Arab League to peace talks on October 14. October 16, France urges stepped-up international action to end the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. October 17, France advances plan to deploy international observers at Jerusalem's Temple Mount. October 20, France's War Against the Jews by Carolyn Glick, a powerful commentary by Israel, probably Israel's finest journalist. November 12, Jordanian officials arrived to set the stage for Temple Mount cameras that came out of this process. And then November 13, Paris was hit with a major terror attack. The president called this an act of war by the Islamic State group. And here's the area that was hit in Paris the following day. After cameras were being put on the Temple Mount and after all those activities took place in October, initiated and accelerated by the French. Fed warns of copycat terrorist attack killers in the U.S. As soon as this happened, we started getting nervous ourselves. Homeland Security increased the surveillances. The FBI director, who had had some tension with Obama, said that there are over 1,000 members of ISIS affiliated in the United States that they're keeping an eye on. That's the one they're keeping an eye on, and that work is overwhelming. And look what happened here just last week in that situation. This is you can't stay up with all these. And unfortunately, terror is incredibly effective. The French disaster, I've heard it cost over around $10,000. They received millions of dollars of free TV publicity, and it's a great recruiting vehicle for the Islamic State or for terror organizations. Sadly, it's incredibly effective for their cause, and it creates heinous, horrible, and evil, these events. But this is really has really had the United States concerned. Then we had a week of unbelievable news. I'm going to go through November 23rd through November 27th in all my years, 19 years of watching Israel in the Middle East and world news from a biblical relevance. I've never seen a week of news like took place between November 23rd and November 27th. I'm going to hit some of the highlights, but these are very significant events. Putin meets with Khamenei. Russia lifts Iran nuclear ban. Monday, November 23rd. Russia and Iran have unity of views on Syria. A spokesman for the Kremlin said Putin had talks in Tehran with Khamenei. Iran and Russia were against external attempts to dictate scenarios of political settlement in Syria. In other words, don't overthrow Assad. We favor leaving Assad in position. One important note here. Why is Russia so supportive of Assad? Putin is very concerned that Islamic State or Al-Qaeda or some other radical group will gain control of Syria, and those radicals will work their way into Georgia and then into former Soviet Union countries in the Caucasian Mountains and then work their way into Chechnya and become an even bigger problem that they already have. That is one of his greatest concerns. And that's why he stood with Assad through this. Unfortunately, if the UN Security Council, if Russia and China had not vetoed every UN security resolution pertaining to Syria, there would not have been over 300,000 deaths in Syria and over 6 million plus people that have been dislocated. So you have Putin's perspective, but at the same time, this has become a very, very significant problem for the world community, and obviously led to the migrant issue with Europe, and eventually with the United States, it looks like. Putin has eased an export ban during his trip to Iran that week on nuclear equipment and technology to Iran. Russian firms are now authorized to export hardware and provide financial and technical advice to help Iran with three specific tasks. They were listed as helping to modify the uranium enrichment plant, supporting Iran in effort to export enriched uranium in exchange for raw uranium supplies, and help Iran modernize its ARIC heavy water reactor. Kremlin hails Iran-Russia unity on Syria. This is the president of Iran, Rouhani. And so this is Putin's day with Khamenei and Rouhani 2 weeks ago from yesterday. Putin announces the S-300 deployment, which was officially began the deployment the last couple of days. You know, a lot of people are concerned about the S-300 because it's anti-aircraft. Anti-missile, but anti-aircraft is incredibly effective. But I read in the Jerusalem Post this week that supposedly this S-300 is in Cyprus, and Israel's been doing work against the S-300 for a while. So Israel, you know, might be an S-300, might be an S-400, and it's a very formative missile defense and aircraft defense system. but Israel's already attempting to beat it in Mediterranean exercises. So anyhow, this is going to be deployed in Tehran. Putin approved the plan of money to begin the transfer of the advanced when he was in town, when he was in Tehran, and that the transfer of weapons had officially begun. The next day, Turkey shoots down a Russian jet. Turkey is a member of NATO. Turkey has a bad relationship with Iran, unless it has to do with trade. They do about $15 billion plus. They both are after money. Iran and Turkey love making money. But when it comes to the leadership of the Shia Islam being in Iran, and one of the leaders of Sunni Islam, which is Saudi Arabia and also Turkey, the Turkey president, I mean, Prime Minister Erdogan sees himself as the go-to Middle East leader of the future. So this is a very interesting conflict. So it kind of the timing of the fact that Putin was sitting there with Khamenei and Rouhani in Tehran. The next day, supposedly this Russian jet kind of went over the line just a little bit. Supposedly warned, the Russian pilot says they were never warned, and they got shot out of the sky. I was at the White House that day, and I'll get into that. That was the day of the Obama-Alan briefing, very interesting timing. But this has really kicked off a very significant problem between Russia and Turkey. They have a tight, tense relationship anyhow, but claimed that the jet was warned 10 times in 5 minutes. The jet was shot down by Turkey. More details. Putin calls Turkey downing a Russian jet a stab in the back, carried out by accomplices of terrorists, meaning Turkey. Supposedly Turkey is buying Islamic State oil, and where this jet was shot down, this is an area where a pipeline goes into Turkey, and there's an oil transaction taking place in this area. So a lot of stuff is coming out about this. And also Russia's cut off buying produce from Turkey, which is about 20% of their produce comes from Turkey, and now they're going to look to Iran, Israel, and Morocco to provide that agricultural product. This is getting pretty bad. Also, Putin says Islamization of Turkey is a bigger problem than downing a Russian jet. When Erdogan took over in the early 2000s, prior to that, there was Israel and the Turks had a very good relationship. They did annual military maneuvers together. Erdogan becomes prime minister. He fires 100 generals. And he is definitely Islamicizing Turkey. And it's become a very significant significant issue. Russian President Putin escalated the war words with Turkey on Wednesday, November 25, 2 days after he was in Iran, accusing the leadership of having encouraged the Islamization of the country. Next paragraph, we observe that the current leadership over a significant number of years has been pursuing a deliberate policy of supporting the Islamization of their country, which is true. Obama Holland swore unity against ISIS at the White House. They pledged solidarity after the Paris attacks. Second paragraph, make no mistakes, we will win, and groups like ISIL. And then Holland's trip to Washington was part of a diplomatic push to get the U.S. and other nations to join his war against Islamic State. The United Kingdom's involved now. Germany's involved. He was at the White House on Tuesday. He was with Putin on Thursday. Putin said he would help with the Islamic State. But unfortunately, most of the initial Russian activity has been done against rebel forces that have been funded by the U.S. and the Saudis that oppose Assad, not the Islamic State. And Putin also said in his meeting with Iran that it's up to the Russian people to decide the Syrian people, who is going to be their president. And Obama was very interesting. As Obama pretty much called out Putin in this in the White House briefing, stated that Russia and Iran are a coalition of two supporting Assad, and that Assad must go. Well, Gaddafi must go, but they didn't have an exit strategy. You know, when Gaddafi was in power in Libya, he kept the terror groups under order for the most part, just like Saddam Hussein for the most part. Hussein, Saddam Hussein, and Muammar Gaddafi were trouble, but this is a Middle East. You have a lot of tribal factions, and unfortunately, some of the Republicans in Congress said, you better know what's going to happen. You take Gaddafi down, it's going to be a big problem. And it has been a big problem. And a lot of the militants that are living in Libya are now fighting in Syria, and it's become a real disaster. Obama pointed fingers at Putin over the shoot down. And he talked about, the issue here is Turkey's a member of NATO, and any NATO member is attacked by another country, then NATO will come in defense of that country. Putin has, some people believe he has a plan of attempting to bust NATO over Ukraine and possibly in this situation. He believes that the European members of NATO are weak, and he thinks Obama's weak, and he thinks this is a time to make a play and to weaken NATO. And, we've had Russian aircrafts near our border on July 4th. We've had Russian subs off our Atlantic coast. Putin is talking about them being a nuclear power. I've been told by a high-level source that the Russians have penetrated our power grid, and they're in there. And this is from a person that does that kind of work. He said the Chinese have penetrated some of our top systems as well, but they're more after espionage and finding out these technologies that they can duplicate, where the Russians have a more adversarial plan. But if Congress has not listened to former CIA Director Woolsey and others warning that our power grid needs to be reinforced to the $5.5 to $7.5 billion. That was 6-7 years ago. And unfortunately, we spend billions and billions, even trillions of dollars on other things, and we're going to have our federal debt doubled by the time Obama leaves office, but we can't come up with $5 to $7 billion to reinforce our power grid, which is four grids plus Texas. So, this is our vulnerability. This is our Achilles heel. This is something that should have been done that hasn't been done. And, God in His mercy has blessed our nation. He's blessed us against enemies in the past. You know, we've had two major events, Pearl Harbor and 9/11, against our nation. We've been blessed by God's grace and mercy and protective hand. But if we keep crossing this, crossing Him and taking Him out of our lives today, these enemies, like Charles Stanley, I heard a great sermon of his a few years ago. My wife and I were in Atlanta. I was speaking at a church, and he said that it was a message on the fact that God raised armies and militaries to defeat Israel when they were rebellious, and then He would defeat them. And he said, if you don't think that'll happen in the United States one day, you're foolish. And that was in 2006, before Obama had taken office. And Charles Stanley, a well-respected Southern Baptist pastor, used the biblical pattern of judgment, of how God used nations to judge Israel. And he said the same thing is coming our way. And unfortunately, the last 7 years is we have definitely gone down the wrong street. So, worldwide travel alerts for Americans, November 23rd. Kerry traveled to Israel to discuss peace talks. He met with met with Netanyahu at his residence, met with Abbas in Ramallah. Looked like Abbas wasn't too happy. And Kerry's visit was the first visit to Jerusalem in over a year. He met with, Netanyahu and Abbas, and he said that they were still committed to two states living side by side in peace and security. Netanyahu said no settlement construction freezes in the meeting until we have this terror stop and further discussion. He says, we are going to continue to build. He said, no settlement freeze, nor will there be one. And this really infuriated Kerry and his staff. Palestinian officials expressed deep disappointment that they weren't able to work something out. And then here's the documentation of they expressed deep disappointment that John Kerry, when he came to the region, could not get the parties back to the table to have peace talks. And then John Kerry, very typical of what John Kerry does, when he got back to Boston, he said, if something isn't done, this is going to spin out of control. And, John Kerry stated this that this is crucial in order to keep things from spinning out of control with Israel, the Palestinians, and possibly further than that. But the key point here is John Kerry has a history of saying things that are used for incitement purposes. He said when Israel was not happy with the direction of negotiations a couple years ago, he said if Israel doesn't cooperate, there could be a third intifada. Israel's at risk of isolation with Europe and the international community. He also said Israel's at the threat of boycotts. Well, behind the scenes, he's talking to Europe about boycotts. And it ended up being the labeling rather than the boycott, but it was all of the same family. And he said Israel doesn't want to be considered an apartheid state. And then here again, danger of European boycotts. This is when John Kerry can't get his way, this is what he does, and this is what he says. But Barak Ravid with Haaretz, it's a left-leaning newspaper, but Barak's one of the best, one of the other journalists that's very effective. He said that the White House had already concluded that Netanyahu and Abbas were a lost cause. But now Kerry's aides are coming to the same conclusion, are begging and pleading isn't helping. One American official said, maybe what's needed is simply for the situation on the ground to force the sides to take action. Well, this will be interesting to see if this happens. But the White House a few weeks ago said, for all practical purposes, they don't see a solution between now and the time out of office. Obama's got a lot of plans with global warming, gun control, the use of executive orders, on and on and on, and I don't think he wants to be distracted by the peace talks in his last 14 months in office. That's the way it looks now, and Kerry didn't have a lot of success during his trip of that week. This week also, that week, Israel suspended EU contacts over the peace process due to the labeling problem. The EU said they will continue the Mideast peace role despite Israel's attitude. Israel on Sunday stepped up its battle with the EU over the decision to label products from the settlements. And that's when Netanyahu suspended contacts with the EU. Russia deploys the S-400 anti-aircraft system in Syria. This is advanced over the 300. And this was put in place to keep Turkey at bay. But at the same time, the big concern that Israel has right now of being able to continue to knock out Iranian shipments meant for Hezbollah. And Putin and Netanyahu had their meeting. They've worked out their differences. So there's a little bit of flexibility for the Russian jets and the Israeli jets. And Netanyahu says, we just have to stop Hezbollah receiving these advanced weapons. And Iran's short-range missile capability has improved dramatically over the last few years. That puts Israel at risk because of Hezbollah and all their 100,000-plus rockets and missiles, mostly rockets, with not far-range but dangerous enough. But Iran's short-range missile capability puts all that oil along the Persian Gulf at risk, and that's in the hands of a lot of Sunni countries. So the question is, will Iran ever attempt to pay back the world economies because of the boycotts, the cost of billions of dollars, and also a friend of mine, Mark Langfin, he's a Jewish fellow from New York City, he developed a black gold triangle map that takes in the entire Persian Gulf. That's 56% of the world's oil reserves are inside that triangle of the nations that border the Persian Gulf. And today, 25% of the world oil goes out of the Persian Gulf in the Strait of Hormuz daily. And if Iran ever gained control of that oil, it could literally send the world economies to its knees. So that's the nations of the world's Achilles heel, and that would have devastating impact. Just think of what $147 oil did to the U.S. economy in July of 2008. That led to a major financial crash and collapse and trillions of dollars wiped out in our markets throughout the world. So Iran is very patient, very strategic, and they've got a plan. And right now, they don't really take the international community as much of a risk. The Russian military deployed this sophisticated 400 system and radar array in Syria. It says here down at the bottom, planes flying in and out of Ben-Gurion International Airport, approximately 240 miles from Latakia in Syria, would be within Russian sights. So, you know, we just hope that Russia, this is the Gog-Magog nation, so you can see the danger. And also recently, you all know about the natural gas find, the major ones off of Israel coast, the Tamar Leviathan fields. But now they found a tremendous amount of oil up in the Golan. And Reuters and Bloomberg and everybody says that Israel's discovered all this oil in occupied land. So this will be interesting, to say the least. But anyhow, things are aligning. The Vatican has been quite, I mean, we could say busy full time just keeping an eye on this Pope. But he said the other day that Christians and Muslims are brothers and sisters. The Vatican acts as if Allah is the same God as the God of the Jews and Christians. Pope Benedict opened up an Islamic office at the Vatican to reach out to Muslims, to improve relations. Former Pope John Paul II, we have a picture, or seen a picture of him kissing the Quran. We have seen the Vatican willing to see Judea and Samaria and East Jerusalem be given to a future Arab state. The Pope is after a closer, more meaningful relationship with the 1.5 billion or whatever Muslims throughout the world. And he's, a lot of these things are incredibly symbolic. And we even had Shimon Peres Abbas and the Pope at the Vatican a couple years ago praying for peace. It's the first time in history that we had an Arab Muslim praying from the Vatican for peace in the Holy Land. Pope also, during this trip to Africa, said that the world is headed toward a suicide if no climate agreement was agreed to. The Pope developed, I think it's 130 or 140 page encyclical about the importance of global warming, of dealing with global warming, and he used a 16th or 17th century Muslim cleric in his encyclical of the importance that this must be solved because the future of the world is at risk. He said the UN Climate Conference in Paris is most likely humanity's last chance to thwart global environmental disaster. The Pope, who wrote a major document on the environment last June, made the comment in an hour-long news conference aboard his plane, returning him to Rome at the end of a six-day trip to Africa. The Turkey leader remained defiant over the Russian jet. He went to Brussels to meet with NATO, and then he went on to the global warming conference. Putin says Turkey shot down Russian plane to defend Islamic State oil supplies. He said he made this statement at the global warming conference on November 30. And he said that, the second paragraph, we've received additional data which confirms that the Islamic State oil enters the territory of Turkey. The decision to shoot down the plane was dictated specifically by desire to defend supplies. Iran says the nuke deal is off if the UN doesn't drop atomic weapons probe. Typical Iran. They agree to something and they start reshuffling the deck, so to speak. Iran said Sunday there would be no final implementation of a nuclear deal with world powers unless a probe into allegations of past weapons research is closed. The declaration by top security official comes after the head of the UN nuclear watchdog sent a report into the possible military dimensions. Next paragraph, Iran has always denied seeking to develop an atomic weapons capability, insisting its nuclear program is for peaceful energy production and medical purposes only. On the sidelines of the global warming conference, I have three photos here. They're classic. This is right after John Kerry's bad week in Israel. And Obama started, and these are pictures done by Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper. And here Obama spends 10 minutes, and you know what they're talking about. And then they start discussing the talks. These are the photos. So you know Obama started the conversation, and Kerry came up to join him, basically saying you really need to do something to work this out with the Palestinians, otherwise this will spin out of control. So that's the direction of this. But what's spinning out of control is the rest of the Middle East. That's the problem. And it's a Shia versus Sunni conflict. It's a Shia caliphate desire to, from Iran to Iraq to Jordan to parts of Saudi Arabia, eventually Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Israel, and on. And the Turks, whether it's the Turkish leader, Erdogan, or whether it's the Saudi leadership, the Saudis are petrified of a nuclear Iran. They believe that Israel would be the first to be hit, and Iran would hit the Saudis second. So this whole region is a mess. You now have British, French, Russian, U.S., and I think I said, I don't know if I said Germany, planes flying around Syria now to deal with the Islamic State. So it's going to be an interesting next few months and into the coming year. Obama's November 26th Thanksgiving message. Like the pilgrims who set sail on the Mayflower nearly 14 centuries ago, these refugees are looking for safety and another chance. And it's important to remember that that they undergo the highest security checks of anyone traveling to the U.S. The president reminded us that providing refuge to some of the world's most vulnerable people is an American tradition. That's the White House website speaking, as in summary, and part of what makes this country the greatest on the earth. Again, the audacity to compare pilgrims, Christian pilgrims, to the plight of the refugees is another just unbelievable statement by him. The White House website. See, there, when Obama wants something, they go full court. And most of the time, they get their way. It's pretty amazing to watch how this works. I mean, right now he's dealing with Congress. The Republicans control the House and Senate, and he's getting his way. It's unbelievable. But his plan here is to get the faith-based organizations, the Catholics and the Protestant organizations, to back his refugee plan. But most of these organizations make hundreds of millions of dollars a year relocating refugees around the country. And he also emphasized with 30 Republican, mostly Republican governors around the country, says, we will not take the refugees at this time under this program. Obama says, yes, you will. He has the right of the President of the United States to determine where they go. And I guess Texas is talking about suing the government. I heard they have, and then I heard they haven't. But nonetheless, Obama is going to be using every tool he has to attempt to get all these faith-based organizations behind his welcome of Syrian refugees and other Middle Eastern refugees and refugees from Northern Africa. So, and then shortly after his big event, the San Bernardino terrorist attack of December 1st, and we're hearing more each day about how radicalized they were through social networks, trips, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and on and on. This man here was educated in California, graduated from California University, worked for 5 years in a social program, in a social environment, and then he just goes and starts shooting his fellow employees. And also shot a Messianic Jew and told him a few days before being killed that he would never see Israel. So the more we find out about this, the worse it gets. Again, we're hearing that a lot of these people were nice, they were pleasant, liked by fellow employees and good neighbors, but then something happened to them when influenced by the Quran or yet unknown extremist elements. Internet visitations to Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and other countries. And additionally, another problem we have is the neighbor who didn't call the police due to concerns about racial profiling is becoming another problem. So we aren't calling it what it is, and we have a situation where there's concern about racial profiling. And then you've probably seen Trump in the last 24 hours says, for now we need to stop this and get a handle on it. Franklin Graham said a couple months ago that we need to stop bringing refugees in from these countries that have terrorist entities. In other words, we need to get a handle on this. And I spoke a couple days ago at Voice of the Martyrs, and one of the gentlemen there, he said, you know, there's some Christian refugees we'd like to see brought into the United States, but we can't get to them. You know, there's no filter. You know, the last quarter there was 2,350 or so Syrian Muslims that got in, and only 44 Christians. They're worried about saying they were a Christian because it could count against them and they couldn't get in the country. Yeah, that says a lot right there. So anyhow, and I'll close with this: as we see a president that's extremely passionate and committed to the refugees, but we see none of that passion or emotion when it comes to the plight of Christians throughout the Middle East. The slaughtering, the persecution, on and on and on. We see no motion and no feeling, but we see a lot when it comes to the refugee situation. And I think that says that speaks volumes. So, God bless you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, we're going to have question and answers here, and we're only going to go for 30 minutes, so we're going to move right into this.
Okay, great.
Bruce, are you ready? Okay, good. All right, 25 minutes until we run out of tape. So it seems to me like the whole world is obviously being totally destabilized. The, traditional cultures and everything are falling apart. And, it's setting things up for elite takeovers and everything. And quickly, Bill, who do you think has a good, real chance of winning the election on the Republican side?
You know, Tommy, that is... we've never seen an election like this. We have a candidate named Trump that has a real solid base of angry Americans. And, you know, he's a very capable business guy. There's made a tremendous amount of money. He's definitely a promoter. But he tells it like it is. There's not a lot of filter at times. He has a tendency to knock someone out and then keep hitting him, which, he needs to be a little bit more tactful. But I think that Americans are so fed up with Washington. I mean, we have a Congress right now that has an approval rating between 12 and 14%. I mean, these are the people that make our laws. These are the people that affect every day of our life. And the approval rating is in the tank. And the other thing that Trump has been able to do, and I got to give him a lot of credit, he's been able to take the punches of the media and even call them out. And that's not an easy thing to do. And
So you think Trump probably has the edge at this point?
At this point, because he's right. Consistently staying between 30 and 35%.
And he doesn't have any fundraising problems.
What's that?
He doesn't have any fundraising problems.
No, he doesn't. With the brilliance of Trump, is he's got a lot of money, he's going to spend it, but he's getting so much free publicity. About every, once a week, he says something that some people think is outrageous, and that's all they talk about for the whole week. So now his statement this week is stop the Muslims from coming into America.
Right.
Last week was we need to register the Muslims. So Tommy, let me. What's important here, and I want to get into this, is I think that, man, Krauthammer, others are saying he's becoming a more effective candidate. I was here in Dallas. I flew down here and went to his deal at Reunion Arena. I mean, it was phenomenal. People from all walks of life were there saying, we are fed up with Washington. We are fed up with things as normal. So he has a very strong, solid base. You know, there's a lot of us that like Ted Cruz. You know, he's a brilliant guy, smart guy, sharp guy. Mike Huckabee, a lot of us like Mike Huckabee. But I think Cruz, Rubio, and Trump have the best shot at this time. I think Cruz was very smart going to New York and spending time with Trump. They have not taken shots at each other. They both came to Washington and spoke against the Iran deal. I think it was wise in both of them, and I think Trump definitely is impressed by Cruz. Cruz is an impressive guy. So at this point, I don't know if Romney's going to come in. They're trying. What's really interesting here is the Republican establishment is scrambling. This is petrifying. You know, they're so used to having their two guys, whether it's Giuliani and Romney in 08, and then they bombed out, and then they got behind McCain because Huckabee made them nervous, and then they got behind Romney in 2012. Well, they don't have a horse in this race right now, so to speak. They're kind of sitting back because they're kind of holding back. You know, they like Rubio, they like Cruz, but they're kind of waiting to sing out. But for the most part right now, Trump is as we know it, in this room, this is a dynamic and a race like no other race we've ever had, Tommy. So only God knows the results. But at this point, the ones that look like they have the best chance is Trump because of his solid, consistent base, regardless of what he says or regardless if he makes a mistake. And then Rubio, Cruz, and Carson's still strong, too. I think Gallup poll today has him 3, Cruz 4. So
this time next year, who do you think will have won between Hillary and the Republicans?
Well, I just that Hillary will be disqualified, whether it's because of them finding something with these emails that just even the Democratic-leaning leftist media would say, hey, that's just bad. I'm prayerful. That or maybe there's a health issue.
Well, just quickly, who do you think will win? I know you don't know, but what's your guess?
I don't even want to guess.
I want you to put your money on the table.
Between Trump and Hillary?
No. Well, between a Republican and Hillary.
Well, Tommy, a lot, these things, we haven't even started the primaries yet.
Well, look, Hillary's already got over a third of the votes. Without even having a primary.
But,
so she's locked in on that side unless she gets disqualified.
Well, we need to pray that something happens with her emails, and we need to pray that some of these health issues she supposedly has will surface.
Yeah.
I just pray that she's not the candidate.
Right.
And then we can wait for John Kerry or Al Gore to come in to save the day.
Okay. Go.
All right, Bill. I loved your timeline. That was really good, especially the juxtaposition of things, bad decisions France made in relation to Israel, things that blew up. What's interesting is last night there was an article in Jerusalem Post. Headline is, a far-right pro-Israel France. Expert says this is where all of Europe is heading. And then it talks about something you did not mention, which is the far-right National Front Party made huge gains in a French regional elections on Sunday night, and that they have the far-right front party has really shifted, and they're much more pro-Israel now than they've ever been. And so this article in Jerusalem Post says this is the direction that all of Europe is headed, is to be more pro-Israel because they begin to wake up to the danger of Muslims. So I wanted to see what your comments were.
That would be awesome if that happens. Claudia and I were at the EU Parliament last year. Matter of fact, we were in Brussels just before your conference last year, Tommy, with the European Coalition for Israel. And I was asking a fellow that was at the dinner, I said, you know, how many believers how many born-again believers in Europe right now? He said, I think about 1.5%. I go, 1.5%? And 2 weeks later, I was here and I asked Paul Wilkinson, I said, Paul, what do you think about that number? He said, that's probably optimistic. He says, it's probably closer to 1%. So we need to keep praying for that continent, because as times get more difficult, I mean, there's a lot of brothers and sisters there over there just kind of waiting for some positive things to happen. And if they get behind Israel and support Israel, that would be fantastic. I mean, there's a lot of dynamics. I mean, Sweden is a problem. This Germany just backed the labeling thing. There's a lot of dynamics still in play, but it would really be awesome if we could see a real movement of the Lord in Europe, because with those numbers, I mean, it's just, I mean, 1 to 1.5% is just so hard to comprehend. But it looks so bleak for Israel right now in the European elite. If some of the people within those states get behind, you know, these kind of situations, it would be awesome to see that happen. Because I tell you, the other thing is this radical Islam, or this Islam problem that they have in Europe right now, is enormous. And we know who the protector. God is the protector. I mean, it's amazing a lot more haven't happened. A lot are being stopped, but we give God the credit for that. But that's encouraging. Thanks, Robbie.
In your humble opinion, has there or is there enough that's been going on with the president to have him impeached?
No. I think Ted Cruz, I think it was about 2 years ago, he put up, I think it was 57 or 75 potential grounds for impeachment.
Okay.
It's probably much higher than that right now. But here's the clever thing that these guys have done. They have really worked the Fergusons, the Trayvon Martin issues. They have really, the Baltimore problem, the Chicago problem, they have really worked these things to the point of creating a potential frenzy in the black community. And the black community is being taken advantage of. And in the event that Barack Obama is impeached by the House, we're going to have some serious civil problems in our major cities. And one other thing I might, and I have, one, I've watched that pattern, and I don't like it, and I like it in the media. Our liberal media throws fuel on every one of those issues to sell advertisement, to sell newspapers, and it's horrible. But that combination of Obama's impeachment protection and the fuel in the fire is formidable, and I think people in Washington are very concerned about that. One other note here, I noticed about a week and a half, 2 weeks before the 2012 election, some people thought Romney was going to get it. I mean, it was trending in the right direction. Even Romney and Ryan and members of the Republican establishment thought on the day of the election that Romney had it. But you already were hearing a lot of bad talk out of the black community, unfortunately, and it stirred things up pretty good. So that was kind of a picture of what it could be like in the event of impeachment. So I think with that said, and I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't, and I think Congress is very concerned about getting to that extent of having it happen.
All right, thank you.
Go.
I have a number of questions, but I'll defer to, I'll ask one at a time. Is that okay?
Go.
Has the Iran nuclear deal been signed by Iran?
I don't think so. I think they voted on it, but I don't think
that's
signed
correct. It has not been signed by Iran.
Right.
Yes. A couple weeks ago, Pastor J.D. Frog at Calvary Chapel, Kanaohe, in his prophecy update, he said he believes that right now we are, World War III has actually started.
Which, what was his name?
J.D. Frog.
Oh, okay. from Hawaii.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of political analysts are saying that. You know, mainstream political analysts are saying
that.
Well,
what's interesting is King Abdullah from Jordan a couple weeks ago said that we're really close to a World War III. We've got to do something quick with Islamic State. If not, it's going to break into World War III. The other thing that was interesting a couple weeks ago, the United States had three aircraft carriers over in the South Pacific, in that area over there, basically to tell China we're serious about defending our allies over here, and we didn't have a single aircraft carrier in the Middle East. Three in that area of the world, none in the Middle East.
That's been, and we usually have two or three over there.
Yeah, at least one, sometimes two.
But they got one going, either going there or he's there now.
That's correct.
That's the first time in over a year we will have a carrier in that area.
Yeah, that's right. And that tension, our U.S.-Chinese tension right now is pretty bad. But also, I think I left it off my PowerPoint tonight, is Russia, about a week and a half ago, has perfected the ability to knock a satellite out. They have perfected that ability, and so has China. They have done it with the laser in another way, but the fact, you know, they aren't going to ever be able to catch up with us militarily, but they're looking at other ways to deal with this. Power grid intrusion, knocking satellites out. I think there's about 900 or so up in the skies. We have about 450 of them. So they're looking at ship-busting missiles. The Chinese supposedly have a very formidable one. So, you know, it's just we take this stuff for granted. I mean, God has blessed us. We don't have problems because we've always had God's mercy and grace.
Yeah.
But, you know, he is long-suffering. But one day, I don't know what it is, before the rapture, after the rapture, I mean, it's all going to come down. And the enemies of America, North Korea, Russia, China, the radical Islamic groups, you know, it could get worse.
Well, just one more question. Do you believe that this oil find and gas find may be the very hook?
Oh, yeah. Definitely attractive to those countries, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Of the immigrants coming into Europe, who are they? Men, women, widows, children?
Well, they're a little bit of everybody, but I think there's more guys than those.
Right, because I've seen.
But the media always shoves them out to the front.
I know, but I've seen pictures. Men, 16 to 45, almost always.
72%.
They're warriors coming into Europe.
Yeah, that's.
Mike.
Yeah, I just noticed a lot of photo ops with Al Sharpton with Obama in the last two years and past. I wonder if perhaps he's positioning himself for the heir apparent for Al's job when he comes out of the presidency, and if he would be more dangerous, perhaps, in that role.
You said, could you report, was it Al Sharpton you said?
Yes, Obama and Al Sharpton appearing together a lot recently.
Well, Al Sharpton's a race hustler.
Yeah.
That he is, you know, he stirs his stuff up. He stirred his stuff up in Ferguson, and then a couple weeks later, he's there at the White House for the annual Easter celebration for the pastors, which was a conglomeration of a lot of pretty bizarre people that supposedly called themselves pastors, mostly pro-gay pastors, or even one Episcopalian priest that was married to a guy. So that's a lot of detail. Probably didn't need to give you all that, but it gets a little annoying. But this is, you know, on a lighter front. They had this Easter. This was this Easter. And this was a conglomeration of a lot of, it was like a costume party, unfortunately. And but people from the religious community, the power goes, as soon as they left, the power goes out of the White House. And it got knocked out at the State Department. It got knocked out at the Treasury Department. State Department, Treasury, and also the White House. Might have been the Justice Department also. But what's classic is that the White House came back on pretty fast, but the State Department and the Treasury were off for a while. But everybody says, well, what caused this? Well, their power supported by this generation station in Maryland. So anybody who reads the newspaper, including the bad guys, are going to find out that facility provides power to those four major governmental offices. And I thought, well, it didn't happen a day later, a week later, a month later. It was somewhat interesting, but
I bet the national debt continued to go up even though the electricity was off in the Treasury.
Translation, please.
So, Bill, I have another question here. Does the Pope understand that Allah is Satan?
No.
No.
You were talking about cameras on the Mount. What's the significance of that?
On the Temple Mount.
The cameras they're trying to install on the Temple Mount?
Security cameras for the violation of those Orthodox Jews that want to get on top of the temple or any potential violence. But it was really, you know, Assad is looking, or Abbas is looking at this as a, this has to do with those radical Orthodox Jews that want to go visit the Temple Mount. And he's saying all this incitement, all this terror that we've had recently in Israel is because of that. So they thought, well, it would be clever to put a camera up there to make sure. That was one of the reasons, to make sure the rabbis and all these Orthodox Jews didn't go up there on top of Temple Mount.
See, you've had a historic argument over who has control of the Temple Mount. Jordan believes that they do because they owned it last, and the Palestinian Authority believes that they have it. Jordan agreed with Israel to put cameras on the Temple Mount, and the PA says we're going to tear them down if you put them up there. Yeah. And they're trying to do that so that the Jews can go up there and they can demonstrate that they're not causing or provoking anything, and it's just the Muslims. Go ahead.
Wilford, would you please comment on the impact of the current oil price? Thank you.
Yeah, I guess it was down again early today. $38, I guess it was. Need to crank up the mic, I think. Is that better? I'll go closer. I'm as close as I can get. what you're asking me what the implications are. There's quite a number of them. It's all around the world. There's good and bad. There's, of course, oil importers, and they're doing pretty well. A lot of these are emerging market countries. But more immediately, We're in one of these classical, we call them bust phases. Countries like Canada are suffering enormously already, lots of layoffs. There's lots of areas here in the U.S. that are having problems there as well. The biggest one probably is for Putin. And he desperately needs to figure out what he can do in the Middle East to get that oil price up.
Oh, yes.
And that's some of the speculations. I suppose you'll know more about that than I will.
Yeah, but the Saudis keep pumping. They even increased their output, and they're trying to maintain market share and drive these other people out, aren't they?
The Russians are upset with the Saudis because they're horning in on their market share of exports to Europe. So they're very upset about that.
Right? Is Canada waiting to see if a Republican gets in to have the pipeline built, or are they going to look at other options?
Really don't know. With the new administration, they're pro-environmental, and those take a long time.
I was specifically wanting to address the aspect. You have many countries, such as Russia primarily, Venezuela, Nigeria, several of them. Their economy is built on a much higher oil price than $38.18 as of today. And the impact and the social impact, et cetera, that would have, and then maybe other impacts from that.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I mean, this is just a budget buster for some of these Middle Eastern countries, for Russia. I mean, the Saudis are trying to crash our fracking business in Texas and North Dakota and the whole U.S. I think fracking is up to 5 million barrels a day. So it's a tremendous amount of oil, and supposedly by 2022, we can be energy self-sufficient. So the Saudis are saying, okay, we've got a $900 billion in our sovereign fund. We can go for a while, and we're going to bust those people that are in the U.S. And also hurt Iran. It's a two-pronged attack. Mm. Let's hurt them more. And let's bust those frackers. But at the same time, it's interesting because I think the Saudis are now through $250 billion of their sovereign fund. So they're going into some pretty serious deficit themselves by doing it, by dropping this price oil. And Wilford said is, they're going to even provide even more oil for the market. So this is killing the Russians. I mean, Citibank a couple of years ago said they need a $125 barrel oil. To provide all these promises that Putin made for the economy. And same thing with Iran. So I still wonder if Turkey, if Russia and Iran ever kind of cooperated.
That's speculation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
By the way, fracking, modern fracking was invented 15 miles from here. And with Israel's seven layers of oil, which is unprecedented in the Golan Heights, Russia wanted to, about 5 months ago, they wanted to develop the Tamar, not the Tamar, but the, what's the other?
Leviathan.
Leviathan, yeah. Gas field. And, you know, Israel said, no, we want to have Western people do that. So Putin is wanting to have the gas and oil, even though it's undeveloped in the Golan, and I could see that as a hook in the jaw. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, because combined with his motive to expand his oil empire.
Absolutely.
Okay, I got a question for Wilford. I saw on your slides the typical interest rates over the past centuries were 5%. Currently, the U.S. national debt is rounded up $20 trillion. If that was the case and the Feds took the interest rates to 5%, we'd have $1 trillion worth of interest every year being paid. Do you think the Feds are going to raise interest rates in the next any time soon?
Well, they're certainly talking that way. It wouldn't be a surprise. It's not going to be a big one. They're certainly talking that way, and it's not going to be a very big one. But it's also possible that they may not. It's totally speculative. But one thing to remember on the way they what's being done with debt, as I mentioned, central banks are buying the debt, and you know, done almost $3 trillion of that. And the central bank then gets the interest. So even if it were to go to 4%, 5%, certainly on the portion that the central bank owns, they're the ones collecting that interest. At the end of the year, what they do is they write a check to the Treasury Department. So it goes right back to the Treasury. So effectively, by using this fake money, they're lowering the net effect of debt and the net effect of interest costs. So it's all funny money.
Thank you for both of your presentations. Excellent. Bill, our military is sworn to defend the Constitution against foreign and domestic enemies. With the downsizing of our military and the concern that people have about what's happening domestically, militarily, what do you know?
Countdown. 14 months.
I know some retired
and pray.
I know some military individuals. They're furious with what's happening.
Joe, I think you know this. You know, I've had a couple of news reports on the downsizing of the military and all the generals that have been forced out of the government, and the fact that the generals that were head of the major parts of the military, you know, of the major arms, the Marines, Navy, Army. Army, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard were told that if you oppose LGBT, you got to go. Or if you oppose Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we're going to let you go. I mean, there has been a lot of disruption in our military, whether it's about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, whether it's about downsizing, whether it's getting rid of hundreds of generals. And
over 400 generals and admirals
were high now?
Purged out about 4 to 5 years ago by the Obama administration.
Yeah, it hasn't been a good situation. And plus, our Secretary of Defense go through Susan Rice, our National Security Advisor, rather than going directly to the President, which is typically, you know, Rumsfeld and others, they dealt, Gates, they dealt directly with the President. And Hagel was tiring of that, having to go through that. And also, Pentagon says, we're tired of the White House running this war. When we need to be running the war, and the Pentagon understands the enemy. That's part of the military, and they are fantastic. So, Joe, and I say this over and over again now because I think it's important. God has his people everywhere.
Right.
He has his people at the White House, at the Pentagon, a lot of generals, high officials. He has them at the State Department. He has them at the CIA. God has his people everywhere. So there's a lot of eyes and ears out there. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation of what the next 14 months are going to be like. Only God knows how it's going to play out because he has that, you know, he's going to determine the direction how things go. Only he knows who's going to be our president here in November of next year, who gets elected. So we're just in unprecedented times, uncharted waters. We've never had a president quite like this. It's been a direct assault against the Constitution. against our Judeo-Christian moral values. We just sit back some days stunned that these things are happening and have happened in the last 7 years.
Yeah, and even if we got a good administration in 14 months, it would take months to purge out those other people, not only from the military, from the Pentagon, throughout all the government bureaucracy. If they're really serious about turning around, they'd have to purge a lot of people.
You don't go in there and fix this in 24 hours. You don't go in and fix this in a year. You're right. There's a lot of problems that need to be corrected. And one of our biggest problems is the judicial activists. My gosh, when you look at the leverage that they have, the Supreme Court making a decision on marriage, it's outrageous. It should have never. Scalia was absolutely correct. That decision should have never been made. It was based on popularity and based on public sentiment, not on the rule of law. And this leads to lawlessness. And unfortunately, that's a lot of what we're seeing today is lawlessness in our country because of what has happened the last 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, I have a question. When we started losing all of these 30 countries in 1944 and 1945 to communism, where we could have stopped it, Vietnam, for example, 14 years we fought, we could have won in 3 months, and yet Laos, who had a strong anti-communist regime, and we pulled the rug out from underneath them. We pulled the rug out from underneath Cuba, Nicaragua, all these different countries. And the reason that we're doing that, somebody's doing that, is because these countries, when they go communist, they already are under a totalitarian dictatorship, so when a one-world government comes, they're real easy to slide in for that particular regime. So that's why, is that what you think Southeast Asia, we gave Southeast Asia, somebody wanted to set them up for a one-world government?
Well, one-world government's always, we've been talking about that for 20, 30 years. We have a Vatican that represents a billion people, not necessarily for all the people, but, they're talking about the importance of having world leaders ruling the world. This global warming thing is a big scam, and you got most of the world leaders that are behind the global warming initiatives. And it's a power grab. Obama's been able to, there's so many new laws and rules that are being passed all the time. I think it was a couple thousand. It just got signed in. It's getting to the point of being ridiculous. I don't know how people do business today. It takes half their time is trying to track all these requirements and regulations that they have to do. So the governments of the world are attempting to control their entities, whether it's through the fiscal control, which is probably the most effective fiscal control through central banks and things like that, and the other through environmental control. I don't know if it'll ever, at one point when the mark of the beast is implemented, it'll be a time of trying to bring order out of chaos, and that'll be one way of attempting to, we can't even begin to extrapolate what that's going to be like, but it's all kind of trending in that direction, less currencies, maybe eventually one world currency, so it's all trending in that direction.
Did Ian Fleming have it right? Is it Spectre behind this whole thing?
What's that?
Well, actually, there's supposedly Spectre really exists, and he discovered this. It was kind of an offshoot of Cecil Rhodes' organization.
Yeah.
They called it Spectre,
Rhodes
and it still exists today.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I haven't spent a lot of time. I know what you're talking about because you're very aware of a lot of that. You've spent a lot of time researching that. There's a dark side. But what's interesting is there's a lot of conspiracy theories, and I had a really smart friend study all the conspiracy theories, and he said, I found out it was more the individuals being used by Satan than the actual conspiracy theory, per se.
Stanley Mongeese.
And I think that's what we're having today. We have all these global people that want to bring order out of chaos. Look how fast people will fall into line with the mark of the beast for order and security. I can go on and on and on, but the bottom line here is everything is moving in that direction that God has written about, and we're blessed to be living here.
Last question.
Wilfred, you said that the economists and people at the Fed didn't know what was going on, didn't know what to do. Yet I note that in the 1920-21 recession, the government and economists acted in a very, very good way, and the recession was deep, but over very, very quickly, and we had very good economic progress after that. Why don't they learn from things that happened in the past that worked well and repeat them?
Yeah, I think they do. Actually, just wrote a report on that last week, and they were citing all the past precedents for some of the policies that are being put in place now. But it is a different situation, so I don't know that you can really compare the 1920s to the situation that we have now. What has happened, and as I mentioned, is they have put in place a lot of high-power policies that haven't been effective. And so that's the big dilemma that they have here right now. They've got the pedal to the metal. They've got to get it through the floor now to negative interest rates in some parts of the world, but it's not working. Oh, yeah, okay. I see what you're talking about. Yeah, no, they haven't done those things, no.
Yeah. Well, let's pray. Father, we thank you that you're in control and that you're demonstrating in history where a man trying to rule himself leads and ends up. The kingdom of man always self-destructs. But we thank you that you've given us the Word of God, your plan for history. And as we see things moving in that direction, we can trust you and get our focus to share the good news of Jesus Christ to as many people as we can and live a godly life for you. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.